we'd have to take some measures, like be controlling who got into the tube or whatever, or be doing more monitoring, having more bobbies out in the beat, or even the army out in the street if it's that dangerous. But as far as I can see, there's actually no change in the way we're policed. It's just simply a way of using a new word to scare the living daylights out of us again. It really is. And thank God the message is getting out there. Quite a lot of people, they're doing the vox pop saying, well, prove it to us, because we really have just had enough of this, basically. Anyway, let's take a look at some of the stuff from the Big Green Gathering. First, we're going to play you a song. If we could just cue that up and bang that on.
You got a reading from it? It's good. Yeah. Right, sleepwalking. When the towers fell, you might as well know. I want to tell that bush geezer knew all along. Done by aeroplanes, couldn't melt solid iron with kerosene flames. They came down by controlled demolition. No wreckage by the Pentagon. That staged attack had gone all wrong. No way did a 747 go through that wall. Columns that were left intact after the so-called terrorist attack. The gap left in the wall was much too small. Sleepwalking into the next world war, like I did so many years before. People, you gotta wake up and figure it out. Out, out. They sold stories straight away to the media corporation slaves, and they lied to us from that moment on. Al-Qaeda they'd blame, eyes all shut, and hijacked four airlines with box cutters and crashed with military precision. And below the towers there was more sound, explosions were heard on the ground. Bombs in the lobby, eyewitnesses said. The catalyst to start another war, planned a year or two before September 11, 2001. Sleepwalking into some full-on war, like I did so many years before. People, you gotta wake up and figure it out. Out, out. The troops were already on their way weeks before that fateful day to rape and pillage Afghanistan. A pipeline was put down, of course, opium replanted and worse, a government installed by the USA. With thousands dead as chemtrails spread across the sky in toxic threads, those streaks of white ain't vapor and ice. It seems we're running out of oil, industry is in turmoil, cause there ain't that much cheap crude left in the ground. China's industrial revolution, humanity's great exploitation, now's the time to turn it all around. People power will save the day, let your soul pave the way, the 100th monkey will sing it loud. People power will save the day, let your soul pave the way, the 100th monkey will sing it loud. Sleepwalking into a paradise, now's the time to break the ice. People, you gotta wake up and figure it out.
That was Sleepwalking, and it was about 9/11. That was something I recorded of somebody at the Big Green Gathering. But just coming back to this latest terrorist scare, I mean, one of the other peculiar things seems to be the type of explosives these terrorists were supposed to be using, some form of liquid explosive that's been reported to be proposed to be detonated by using a camera flash. Now, again, I'm not sure of the technology of these things, but it doesn't strike me that a camera flash would be enough to ignite fluids and so on. And again, I mean, you do wonder if these things are at all feasible. I mean, we'd like to hear some more experts, perhaps, and not experts in the pay of the Zionists, but genuine experts telling us if these things are actually feasible, because it doesn't seem to be that way from my point of view. Anyone else going to add to that?
I'd just say that I used to work for MI5, so I can talk bollocks and sound like an expert. Do you want me to comment on it?
Well, I'd like to say, working at the BBC, I want to know why they don't invite somebody on. They've got the handle on all the experts. Surely they asked them, no?
Well, indeed. Well, the BBC actually were going to have me on last night, but strangely enough, when I was supposed to get the phone call to appear on the programme, they didn't even actually phone me up to appear. And, of course, I was bounced off the ITV news as well.
You also bounced off TalkSport.
I did TalkSport with James Fell.
In the evening.
Oh, in the evening, yes, as well. So, clearly, they don't want me to be out there on the mainstream media saying this stuff, and that's because, obviously, I get up their noses. And, of course, as I mentioned last week at the Big Green Gathering, I did actually lose my court case the other week.
Not your mini-disc, then?
Not my mini-disc, what?
You lost your mini-disc last week.
I didn't lose my mini disc last week. I mislaid it.
Okay, it was Tony's. That's not strictly true.
When I was chemically challenged last week at the Big Green Gathering. I lost my thread now. What are we talking about?
Your court case.
Oh, my court case. Yes, indeed. Yes, I went there. And, of course, as usual, I lost. Now, this might be because people think, well, you don't take a good case. But what I found extraordinary about the whole process I've been through is that none of the judges have actually wanted to hear the case or hear any evidence. They've clearly decided, because in this case they were deciding actually against me without having a hearing, which is more or less what happened under the Official Secrets Act. They had pre-trial hearings, and then as a result of that, I couldn't put evidence into the main trial. But, of course, I wasn't allowed to put evidence in the pre-trial hearings, because they were only legal hearings. So this is getting to be quite surreal now. I've been pursued by the government for a good 10 years, and at no point have I actually been freely allowed to adduce evidence to defend myself. Now, when I say this to people in Britain, they say, sure, that can't happen. This is Britain. We have fair trials here. And you've got to say to them, well, look, wake up. We used to, but we don't anymore. And basically, this is, though, giving me an opportunity, because they've given me till 20 seconds to put in the case for an appeal. Now, I'm going to use that opportunity to gather everything I know about my own experiences, about the other experiences of false flag terrorism we know, ranging from Hitler burning down the Reichstag, through to the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, through up until what's going on at the moment. I mean, famously, the attacks in Mumbai took place on 7/11, if you put it in the American dates, and apparently the bombs went off, there were seven bombs going off 11 minutes apart. No, Mumbai. This is in Mumbai. No, it's not the CS. We're going to say if you cross 7/7 and 9/11, you might get 7/11, but there you go.
You get Saint-Cassette in France as well, but that's something completely different.
It's completely different, yes. So I'm actually going to get this whole case together with all the supporting evidence and just put it into the judges and say to these judges, do your worst, really. I mean, you know, because the case is there. And I'm going to point out how the authorities, MI5, have lied for their teeth all the way through this. I couldn't cross-examine one of their witnesses who was a liar. I'm also going to point out to them that, you know, if I really was this person that they portrayed me as, damaging national security and being bitter against the service, I could quite easily, of course, have just spilled names on the internet, spilled secrets over the internet, and they would be able to do absolutely nothing about it. But instead, I've stuck to my guns and tried to get people to take my evidence. And as things stand at the moment, I'm about to write to Blair again, saying it's time you took my evidence before any more innocent people die, because, it's, you know, it's gone beyond a joke, it really has. And, you know, Blair might think he's doing the right thing, but I think there's probably some people in downtown Beirut who wish he's a little bit more outspoken about Israeli violence, basically. And that's the problem with this. It is a crusade against Islam, because there's no point in trying to pretend it otherwise, because Blair doesn't condemn Israel. Are we?
I was thinking it was Israeli terrorism myself.
Yes, it is Israeli terrorism. Yes, when we were in the services, terrorism was defined as violence used or motivated by politics, basically, and that's exactly what Israel's doing. That's exactly what the UK and the US have been doing in the Middle East as well. None of it's war, because war's only legal in self-defence. Have we got this lined up yet, haven't we?
We have. What would you like?
Not on here.
Yes.
The next track?
Seems to have run away. I think you'll have to play this one.
Right, okay.
But it is appropriate.
Okay.
It's about... Well, it's about what's going on at the moment. Okay.
Dave is awful about music, so don't expect him to know what he's talking about.
Are we on?
This is his favourite track.
Oh, is it? Oh, God, not Confusion.
No, it's very confusing because this track doesn't want to play. Talk amongst yourselves, will you?
Why is it stopped for?
It's just decided to have a day off or something.
Should we eject it?
Yes.
Sorry about this. Technical problems here. No, it won't even eject. Oh, no, it has ejected.
It was so much easier down a mobile phone from the Big Green Gathering, wasn't it?
It's a blooming terrorist CD. That's what it is.
It's MI5.
Either with us or you're with the terrorist CDs.
That was Suspect Device by Stiff Little Fingers. Indeed, yes. So all the old punk favourites coming out today.
You're showing your age.
And we're all Suspect Devices, of course. Yes, I'm showing my age. But then again, punk was the most exciting thing ever to happen. Well, it certainly was when you're 13, anyway. Yeah, we're talking about Randa Alami and Jawed Botme, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely, because we're talking about this whole scheme of false flag terror. I mean, things like 9/11, things like 7/7, things like possibly what's gone on this week are not random or isolated occurrences. One of the things that you blew the whistle on, of course, was the fact that two innocent Palestinians were put in prison for conspiracy to blow up the Israeli embassy in 1994 in London. Now, one of the things I remember you said you saw when you were in MI5, well, there were two pieces, actually. One was that the Iranians or some Iranian-backed group were trying to do something, but that was just a random piece of intelligence coming in. But that intelligence was not disclosed at their trial, so it became an unfair mistrial. But the other thing, of course, was that there was an assessment made by a very senior MI5 officer called G91 at the time, who had seen all the evidence, who had seen all the intelligence, of course, around this case as well. And his assessment was that Mossad had carried out the attack themselves. Now, again, this sounds like it's something in the realms of fantasy, but it's not, because Mossad at that time, the Israelis at that time, were hassling for greater security around the Israeli embassy in London. This is back in 1994. They had been subject to a couple of other attacks around the world, and they were frightened and they were paranoid about attacks. But more importantly, by framing these two innocent Palestinians, they managed to shatter the support network, the political network that they had been building up in London. So we're looking at the mistrial of two innocent young people who are working in London, Samer Alami and Jawed Botme. And we know Randa, Samer's twin sister, very well. And it appears that they were very politically active in London at that time. And by framing them for this attack, of course, it shattered the network. And everyone else ran for cover. And the Palestinian support network is only just getting back on its feet. So Mossad achieved two key objectives at that point: greater protection for their embassy, and also shattering a political support network that was getting leverage with the English politicians. And it's just disgusting to watch things like this happen. But I think the most disgusting aspect of that whole case was the fact that despite this, despite you coming forward and saying they had a mistrial, there was an obvious mistrial, there were two key pieces of evidence not disclosed at the trial. In order to make sure that you, as a whistleblower, was not vindicated in front of the British press, they ensured those pieces of evidence were covered up. They continue to this day. So we have two innocent Palestinians who are in their 20s when they were convicted, rotting in prison now. They were both sentenced to 20 years each. And because they won't say that they're innocent, that they're guilty, because they always proclaim their innocence, they are continuing to rot in prison, despite overwhelming evidence that they suffered a mistrial. And I just think that's playing with people's lives. That is disgusting politicking around people's lives. I can't believe that the government's got away with this to this day just to stop you being vindicated as a whistleblower.
It's also the judge, though, isn't it, as well? These are the people, of course, who refused to let the Guildford 4 out in a decent time, refused to let the Birmingham 6 out. Probably the same sort of people who've also said that the appeal court, of course, okayed the use of torture information, thereby encouraging the practice. The appeal court also okayed imprisonment without trial. This is the mentality of the higher echelons of the British judiciary. This wouldn't be happening if we had the Spanish judiciary or the Italian judiciary, for example, who are highly independent and ensure that the laws are applied without favour or without, you know, objectively, basically. And I think this is one of the great problems in this country. I mean, quite clearly, the higher level judges are Freemasons, and of course, the Zionists have taken over Freemasonry. Well, we saw it in the 19th century when they took over, when the Jews took over the hexagram, which is an ancient symbol of the Freemasons and pagans and so on, of unity and stability, basically.
But when you call them Freemasons, I don't know if that's necessarily just the case. I mean, these people, on the whole, are white, upper-middle-class males who went to Eton, who went to Oxbridge, know nothing about real life, and just see two Palestinians as, well, you know, they probably deserve it. It's a bit like the Irish. Oh, it's the paddy question.
Yeah, exactly.
Stick them in prison, nobody will ask any questions. It's disgusting. Yeah. It's racist.
But this is typical of our upper classes, though. When you actually examine them, you realise that the vast majority of them are psychopaths. They have absolutely no concern for democracy whatsoever. They're lazy people. They have no... cowards. They won't stand up to anybody. And this has been going on for long enough. I mean, you know, when Spycatcher was banned and it was published abroad, our judges upheld the ban, even though anybody abroad could read it. I mean, things like that, you just wonder what these people are all about. And then you see what they're all about. That's all about authority. That's what it's all about, saying we've got the power and you haven't. That's what my court case was about. We know this kind of use of the law is part of the Zionist plan. Of course it is, for God's sake. It's just there to basically frustrate us. Anyway, before I get too annoyed with the British judiciary, I say, well, one of my beefs, basically. You know, obviously I don't advocate violence or whatever, but I do wonder why terrorists who indiscriminately kill people don't indiscriminately kill the children of judges, for example, or the Prime Minister, because that's what I would do if I was a terrorist. That's what I would make people focus on these things. But, of course, I'm not a man of violence. I'm not trying to give ideas to Al-Qaeda.
And you certainly wouldn't be glorifying terrorism.
I'm certainly not glorifying terrorism, no. But I mean, I imagine Tony glorifies terrorism by...
supporting the Israelis.
Supporting the Israelis, yes, exactly. But I don't think they think that's terrorism. Well, quite why they don't, again, is a problem they have, basically.
I saw on the internet today a picture of a young boy, a Lebanese boy, whose face was burnt off by white phosphorus.
Yeah, I know.
It's all happening over
and
there.
And the white phosphorus thing, I mean, where are these people coming from? I mean, you know, there's no excuse for the use of chemical weapons. These things are banned by international treaties and... You know, quite frankly, the people who are in charge of the states who've used these things should be on trial for war crimes, and if they are found guilty according to the evidence, should be put away for 40 years without the possibility of parole.
But the thing about white phosphorus is that it isn't banned. They don't consider it a chemical weapon because it's not on a list of chemical weapons.
Well, that's okay then.
I think it is, though, isn't it? They try to put that propaganda out in the past that it's not on a list of chemical weapons, but I'm pretty sure it is.
Well... if it is, they're saying it isn't, and that's why they're allowed to use it.
You know, I think they put that argument out, but I don't think it holds ground. I don't think it stands scrutiny.
Well, it is a chemical, and they've used it as a weapon. Hello.
So, exactly. It's all intents and purposes, it's a chemical weapon, basically. So, there you go. As opposed to, of course, a bullet, which, of course, is clearly not a chemical weapon. Right, we're going to get some bits now from the Big Green Gathering. I was sort of interviewing a few people around the 9/11 tent just to get their impressions of the day and what was going on with 9/11. So we're going to fade in some of those now, basically. Right, I'm going to interview some people. Hello, Steve. You want to be on the radio?
Hello. Hi, my name's Dr. Hopwood. I'm chairman of the Totnes Group.
Hi, Steve.
Hiya. Yeah, we came up and gave David a hand putting on the videos, and it's been to Bristol, got an amplifier, so we'll be showing movies tonight, which is about time.
Hmm. Absolutely, yes. And so what do you think about this so far? What do you think the response has been here to people who, or what has the response been? Have people been into 9/11 already? Have you got converts or what?
Some people definitely haven't heard of it before, which is quite amazing. And when you stand there and you talk to them for 10 minutes, and as soon the penny drops, it's really not difficult to comprehend. And once the picture's laid out to people, then they really do understand.
Yeah, and that's what I find as well. I really can't understand why people can't see sense. And I was talking to a left-wing activist the other week, a man called Milan Rai, and I tried to demonstrate to him that the satellite hotspots from the thermal image seemed to prove that these buildings were brought down by a controlled demolition, but he just didn't even want to talk about it, basically. That's what they do all the time. I've also got Adrian Connick here with me, who is the director of Mind the Gap, which is a call for an inquiry to 7-7. Hello, Adrian.
Hi.
So what do you think about Adrian?
Think about what, 9-11 and people disputing it?
The
what
festival.
The festival. Yeah, it's really, really chilled here. It's a good vibe. And I like it. It's lush scenery. I've lived in the Mendips before, so I like it down here. And it's kind of good that we can't get frequency on our phone. And yeah, it feels good to be out of the city.
And how are the how's Mind the Gap going? Is it shifting?
It's shifting, yeah. It's becoming an underground film, basically, as I always envisioned it. I mean, it's getting downloaded by the thousands off the internet, which is really good, from all around the world. Especially the States, funny enough. It's about sort of 60% people from the States downloading it. So that's positive for me, because I think they're obviously the people that have been awakened through 9/11. There are a lot of them out there. I think we underestimate how many people have actually woken up now. And so I really don't think they can pull anything off more in America. You know, this is, you know, I think it's really going that way.
Do you think in a sense they've kind of drawn the line at 9/11, they've decided they can't do anything about, but they've drawn the line on 7/7? Because you were telling me the other day that eBay won't actually now sell Mind the Gap. Is that what's right, yeah?
Yeah, eBay have banned Mind the Gap through copyright stuff. I mean, to be honest, I haven't bought all the copyright for the thing, but we have looked into the fair use policies of the copyright law, and as far as we're concerned, what we're using is in the public interest, therefore comes under the fair use copyright laws.
So is there any chance of getting it back up on eBay?
Not by the look of things. Kenny, who's running the shop, is appealing, and we're going through a process of emailing various people about it. But to be honest, you know, it was inevitable, really. I mean, there's a lot of copyrighted things on eBay, a lot of independent videos similar to myself, but just don't cover such a sensitive subject, that have been up there for months, even years. And the fact that Mind the Gap was taken down within, I think it was 8-9 days of it being up there, and this is, they have to have a whole board of people look at this film. Letters have to be sent into this board, then this board assess it. So people got their letters in pretty damn quick, you know, a bit too quick for it to be, you know.
So presumably what you're saying is, what I'm thinking, what anybody else would be thinking is about 9/11, is that the New World Order, the shadow government, are trying to mess us up again, yeah?
Well, yeah, if you want to be blunt about it, yes. I mean, it's the powers that be don't want this film to be seen by the mass. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I know, and this is what they do, they try and stop you getting out. And I had the same experience in court today, in court last week as well, where they wouldn't let me produce any evidence. But as a result of that, of course, I'm going to be going to appeal, and the judge has given me until the 22nd of September to get an appeal in. And because MI5 actually chose to mention 9/11 and 7/7 as serious reasons why they should keep me quiet, we can put in evidence to contradict that. And I'm going to do that. We're going to put in the entire evidence from everything I know, everything Annie knows from our time in the service, and all the other evidence of false flag terrorism that's emerging that can be seen on DVDs like Alex Jones's Terror Storm, basically. Also been a strange week as well, because I went on the James Whale show on Friday morning and denounced Zionism, basically. And I'm not sure quite why I've done this. But if I suppose you're truly spiritual and you believe that you're protected, you will be protected. And I made it very clear on the programme, obviously I wasn't talking about the Jews, I was talking about the Zionists, and I obviously said that I wasn't anti-Semite because I'd spoken out when I didn't believe MI5 were properly protecting the Israeli embassy in London. But that clearly wasn't enough for them, because within seconds, rather remarkably, we had two people on the phone accusing me of being anti-Semite. I suddenly thought this was some kind of phone ambush or something. I mean, do the Zionists have every broadcast monitored and lots of people waiting on the lines to phone in? Well, clearly they do, yes. But what I found really interesting was actually, after these two calls, was how people started phoning in and saying, well, thank God someone's saying this. Someone's telling the truth. We don't hear enough of this on the radio. What's going on? And of course, James Weller, I know, was actually on my side and was sort of really sort of dealing with these calls, was trying to accuse me of being anti-Semite and saying, this is just ridiculous. Of course, the man's not an anti-Semite. And it's quite strange because after that radio show, obviously, clearly, we took them on and we got the better of them. So we kind of rattled their cage. And now they're going to be angry. So I don't know. Perhaps next week somebody else will be doing this show.
No, I'm still here, though. So they haven't got me yet. And I actually did the Islam channel this week and did an hour and a half of this stuff. So it's not as if I'm keeping quiet about it. I'm going to go head on and face these people up because I actually believe some of the problems in the Middle East because we haven't actually shouted this loudly from the rooftops that the Zionists are responsible for this. This is not the same thing as the State of Israel. It's not the same thing as the Jews. But it is, though, the cabal of international bankers and the defence industry, with certain elements of the State of Israel, with elements working within this country and working in the States. They are the people who are carrying out the false flag operations. They are the people who control the economy through the money supply. And they're also the people, crucially, who decide what you're allowed to hear, because they actually own the mainstream media, basically. So go back to the BGG, then. What did you make of it, Annie?
I thought it was an amazing experience. I mean, it's very heartening to see so many people who are so aware of some of the big issues going on the planet at the moment. It wasn't a bunch of spaced out hippies, well, apart from you, of course. It's just generally people who are very concerned.
Careful, my mum might be listening.
I doubt it. It's just a bunch of people who are very concerned about where this planet's going for a number of reasons, not just the political, the arms stuff, the wars, but also what's happening to our environment. And I think it's very heartening to spend time with people like that.
Yeah, I know. I came away from the festival feeling sort of kind of spiritually stronger, certainly. I think the whole idea of getting away from the city and its strange vibrations and electromagnetism and being in a field with like-minded spiritual people is probably one of the best things you can do spiritually, basically.
Well, I have to say, though, there was one downside, which was having a naked shower in a wood with cold water. But apart from that...
And that's the downside? My God. She means selling little beautiful tickets to watch. There you go. but we had a good time there. We're going to play a little bit more of that soon, in a second or two. But I just want to say, obviously, there are a lot of people out there who share these views. There are a lot of people, obviously, who are starting to live alternative lifestyles. But we think a lot of people out there who are living relatively normal lifestyles who really want to find a change because they can see which way things are going. They're working a lot harder for a lot less, basically, in our society. That's creating enormous problems, and we can see society fracturing. I mean, one of the highest causes of death amongst young men between 18 and 24 now is suicide, would you believe? So this society, by quite a few benchmarks, really isn't working at all. But anyway, let's play a little bit more of the interviews from the Big Green Gathering.
Anyway, this is David Shaw now talking to
Philip May.
Hello, Phil.
Hi. Well, I'm a bit worried that this recording might be passed on to a government body, because as I understand it, I could be locked up for how long without giving a reason? My property can be taken away, so I'm going to be careful about what I say. Quite literally. I think that time is... it's coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt about that. There's prison-building programs going on. They want to chip us all. They want ID cards. And what I think is going to happen is the people who don't agree are just going to be put in prison camps, basically.
Yeah. The previous talk on the truth behind the 7/11 and 9/11, and did a quick hands-up poll of how many people were aware of the pitfalls and shortcomings in the official narrative. There's about 50%. The other half, they didn't specify, but I presume they haven't gone into it, and therefore their only link and source of knowledge is the mass media. Oh dear.
Now, this is the problem as well. You're not going to be reading this stuff in the mass media. You're not going to be hearing the sort of stuff you hear on this show on Radio 4, basically. But we are telling the truth. In fact, I'm going to now walk over to the 9/11 Truth tent, which is here. We've got an old army tent. We're supposed to have a film and project, which is coming along later. But what we're doing is using 9/11 as the sort of key issue, which is going to open people's minds up to the possibility they're being lied to, as they are about 9/11. Just to give you an idea of the selection of some of the DVDs we've got here, we've got 9/11 Eyewitness, which is an account by a guy called Rick Siegel, who actually films from the opposite side of the river from Hoboken. And I've seen this film. It's a great film. It actually shows the detonation charges going off. You see the smoke coming up from the bottom of the towers. You see flashes, all the stuff about controlled demolition. This is all new footage. This is a Zapruder film for 9/11, basically. And it also shows a load of helicopters going across the Twin Towers that day, and they're not trying to save people, so we wonder what's going on there. I'm on a DVD here. It's Invisible Ballots. That's about the stealing of the 2004 election by Bush supporters providing the machines that count the ballots, and there's no independent audit. I mean, you wouldn't really believe this could happen, what's supposed to be the world's most advanced democracy. Then we've got The Secret, which is, in fact, a film about what is supposed to be an ancient secret, and that is that positive thought changes the world. A bit of a cheesy American version of it, or Australian version of it, but nevertheless, one worth watching. If you really do believe in the spiritual, and you really do believe that we're not just here to take part, we're actually here to actually change the world, basically, and we can do that just through positive thought, basically. Hello there, hi, I'd like to be on my radio show.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about here at the Big Green Gathering today is very interesting. It's stuff that's close to my heart as well, but I can't say that I've ever joined any action group to do anything about it. I don't actually live in this country 12 months of the year. I only come here to trade. It's just like we're living in an era now. We're living in a time when the negative forces, devil, Satan, whatever you want to call them, are in charge. And I don't know when that's going to change.
I mean, I don't know if you read your Bible, but I certainly think we're in the end of days, which is the battle of good and evil, basically. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, to a certain extent. Though, I would like to think a time comes when those people, such as Bush, others can see there is that they're seen and brought to trial, and people can see that what they have been going on with is actually, as you hear today commenting about, untrue, that they're actually brought to book for it. I wouldn't like to see the world kind of end and they kind of, it's never kind of revealed truthfully exactly what these people are about.
No, I think it's coming out though, I really do. I think it's coming out. Thanks so much. What's your name, by the way?
Russ Cypher.
Russ Cypher. Thanks very much, Russ. Right, what are we doing now? Hello, Annie. You're going to go, kind of say a few words to the show? You're at your first festival, so what do you think?
This is my second festival, actually. I was here last year, remember?
Well, it's your first festival actually staying at under canvas.
Well, I have to say that's a bit of a shock. I'm more a five-star kind of girl.
And what do you think of it?
Not bad. Recommend it to anyone.
Yeah. Not complaining about your tent, are you?
No, I'm praising the tent very
highly. Have you been converted yet to ethnic clothing?
No. This is not ethnic, this is stylish.
Still wandering around like a London spy.
I've actually converted to some ethnic clothing already. I've got myself a very fancy hat, basically.
Dave, you're not in ethnic clothing. You look like a Boy Scout.
Not now, but I was early on. My hat, my very interesting hat.
Yes.
That one looks a bit Peruvian or Andean or something.
You look like a gnome.
Yes, a bit more there from the Big Green Gathering. You can probably tell from that we all had a lot of fun there. Rather bizarrely, is when I had one of my kind of strange spiritual things. I was just sort of standing around by the 9/11 truth tent. I'd done a talk and it's a bit of a loose end. And I found myself just kind of wandering around the festival aimlessly, wondering why I was walking around, because I'd obviously seen everything at the festival already. I'd been there a good few days by this point. And I just wandered until I found myself outside this tent. I looked to see what was on. And sure enough, it was a talk entitled Beyond 2012 by a guy called Jeff Stray. And of course, this was a talk I'd actually missed at the Sunrise Festival, because although I'd been at the Sunrise Festival, I actually injured my ankle and been unable to actually walk to the tent to hear it. But when I actually walked in, I realised that Jeff Stray was somebody I'd actually seen previously at one of my own talks. But not only that, I'd actually seen him at the talk and known at the time of the talk. I had to talk to him for some reason, but I hadn't done it at the time because he'd gone off and I'd been talking to other people. So it was all very bizarre. And of course, the talk he gave about Beyond 2012, which is basically about how all these ancient cultures and other theories, with things like the time wave theory put forward by this guy called McKenna and so on, all seem to be suggesting that we're going to go through some massive change in 2012. And this could range from, you know, the end of the earth, the apocalypse, or up to the idea that we somehow shift into the fifth dimension. Which may sound bizarre, but, you know, quantum mechanics and spirituality are now suggesting that there are 10, possibly 11 dimensions. That's in addition to, obviously, the four we live in, including time. So a whole variety of views there. And, of course, what I was hearing was really what I was experiencing on my own personal journey, that human beings are going to become more communal. We're going to be able to share the collective consciousness much more easily. And we're going to increasingly live in the present. Of course, anybody who's done mushrooms will know that when you get up there on those mushrooms, time becomes meaningless. There is no past, there is no future, just entirely of the present, and appreciating the present, and appreciating things like the kind of intense love you feel in those circumstances. But as I say, I got taken this talk by the light, and I had a lot of things that I basically need to hear at that point. I haven't done a lot of esoteric stuff recently, because I've been focusing on 9/11 and 7/7. But it gave me a chance, obviously, at the festival to be able to talk about more of my ideas about quantum mechanics, spirituality, and the new politics, really. And hopefully we're going to try and make a DVD from this. We're going to call it The Real Secret, as opposed to the secret, the DVD you heard us discussing there, which I've got to say is rather cheesy and is not a film that really grows on you. I've now seen it about 3 or 4 times, and although it has the right idea that by thinking positively about things, you can attract them to yourself, it doesn't really have much of a spiritual element to it. And I always believe that positive thought will work much more effectively if you connect to the light.
Don't knock it, Dave, because remember when you were in prison in Paris when they were trying to extradite you? We did affirmations religiously for about 3 months. David Shaler will not be extradited. David Shaler will not be extradited. And it worked. You were released. Even your lawyers thought you were going to be extradited. So there is a definite strength in the power of positive thought.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, I this is the first time we started this. And it was so funny because I was in prison. I've always been very sceptical about these things. But when you're in prison, there's nothing else to do. And hope's taken away from you. You'll do anything. And it was in Scott Adams, wasn't it? We read it in the Dilbert books, of all places, where the guy who wrote them, Scott Adams, said he'd started doing this thing called affirmations. And his particular affirmation was that this was when he was an unknown cartoonist. He said, I will have a number one bestseller in the New York Times bestseller list. And he did. By writing it down over and over again, it happened. And similar with me, I actually wrote down 25 times every day that I would not be extradited, and I wasn't. And in fact, I can remember chanting this before I went into court and for the judgment, I will not be extradited, I will not be extradited, over and over again. It seemed to work, and this seems to be a proof, and that's the proof without the light even. I had no belief then. I think now, if you connect to the light, that positive thought is that much more effective, basically.
Well, we had an interest in the sort of physical side of it, the quantum side of it, even then, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I have to say, well, you might have been sitting in a prison cell, but I was whizzing all over the place doing God knows what, and I still managed to write my 25 lines every night. So there you go, power of love.
Yes, indeed. It's amazing what you do when you put your mind to it, basically. And that's really the phrase, isn't it? Putting your mind to it, essentially. Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we've got a very good response to the whole idea of this new politics, and just to kind of give you a broad outline of what the new politics is, the way I say it, is that, you know, it's not playing safe like traditional politics. It's about being there, dominating the arena, because what we are saying is true, and we're saying it with love in our hearts, basically. And we should be, therefore, very proud of spreading that message. And I actually do think the very act of spreading that message itself means that you better connect to the light. It's a whole thing as a kind of cyclical thing going upwards, if you get it right, basically. And so the new politics as well is not about getting angry about things. I made this mistake myself the other week with the conflict in the Middle East, and I came to hate the state of Israel so much what it was doing that I lost my connection to the light, and that stage I don't think I'm much used to anybody, basically. So this whole thing is a spiritual lesson. We're not supposed to get angry. We don't get scared either, because one of the things they want you to do is to live in a state of fear. So we kind of conquer these kind of animal instincts, these sort of animal instincts for survival. We rise above them, and with all the people who oppose us, and we have no qualms about calling them our enemies, because they are our enemies, we accept that they can repent. They can go through an entire rethink about their lives, and as long as that repentance is genuine, they can join us. And we see this as very much different from the left, who really just employ the same prejudices, different prejudices from the right, but prejudice nonetheless. I mean, certainly I've personally experienced the prejudice of the left, which I find extraordinary. I have to say to these people, you know, why would you want to oppress someone who's been oppressed like me? But, you know, they clearly think that they have the way forward, even though over the last 25 years they've not won a single battle in the war against the New World Order. And, of course, we can't beat the New World Order using traditional politics. They own the MPs, they own the government, they own the press. So there's no way.
They own the guns as well.
And they own the guns, of course, and we're not going to do it like that. But we think by stepping back, turning the other cheek from time to time, but by being positive and focusing on the good things we're doing, the good things that are coming out of these wars, because although people are dying, we are seeing an enormous psychological change amongst mankind, awakening up. That this kind of behaviour is simply no longer acceptable. And also seeing as well about how, you know, the most powerful nation in the world in terms of military power, despite all its satellite systems and its nuclear weapons and so on, can't actually occupy a foreign country where people are defending their own homes and their families and their land. You know, those people are always going to be more determined. And so the spiritual politics really is trying to look at a different way of going forward, and that's to get away from this divisiveness of mainstream politics, for people to perhaps, if they are going to put themselves forward as representatives, to appraise their own weaknesses as well as their own strengths, and that way we'll get some idea of whether this person is truly has insight and is a truly honest person. And even then, you'd only have that kind of conflict going on if you had two people going for the same job. The idea would that people would rule themselves out if they thought that somebody else would be better than them. Because let's face it, most of the splits on the left have not been really to do with principle. They've been as a matter of ego. And of course, all the people who've caused those splits through their egos have caused people to suffer. People, you know, poor people who've lost jobs as a result of the left not maintaining power. Anyway, we're going to hear another quick interview now for the last bit of the show. It's another bit from the Big Green Gathering, a guy called Dave Roughmouth.
Dave, please come in here. We're on my radio show. This is Dave Roughmouth.
Hello there.
Tell the listeners what you do.
I run and still run the Britain's oldest running hip-hop label, Rough Beats, but about 4 years ago I became one of the original 15 that sat in a pub talking about the 9/11 movement and stuff, and set it off back then, dropped the record label and that side for a bit, and put all my energies and efforts into trying to research and then get out the real story behind the alternative conspiracy theory pack of lies from the US government.
And how do you do that then?
My personal style is, by now, it's having as much fun as possible with people and using the tools that we've got and a sense of humour, because to me, you know, dealing with such a dark deed that destroyed so many of its own citizens, the only way to deal with that sometimes is to employ dark humour and let people see just how bizarre a world it is that we live in, rather than the rose-tinted one of the media and certain newspaper journalists that just tow whichever way they're told to and, you know, don't have a voice anymore. And it's, you know, to me, dealing with the music industry and then coming into 9/11 was like perfect training, because in the music industry it's all about, you know, how much you pay PR, how you grease this pole, how you get the managing directors on site, all the same stuff. But, you know, with 9/11, it was even harder initially to deal with that than it was put music out.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, even though it's so bloody obvious, basically. But you've been doing free parties and stuff as well, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. We like to take it back to the actual thing of away from the nightclubs, away from the door staff, away from all the negative elements, and give people a proper place to come and party, where if they do stuff, they know it's their responsibility, but they also know there's people there that will take care of them to a point. And as just the thing of the big difference between the free parties that we do and everyone else does is, once it's outside, people have got to go and walk away and sort their things out, and can. They're not kept in like rats in a nightclub cage being pursued by all sorts of things that make it 10 times worse. You just, you know, and people generally, and I find this, a lot of the most disheartened people and the people that have got real life stories and gone through real experience quite often are the very ones that have to go beyond a certain point of so-called sanity to come out the other side and then be the most passionate and fire-filled people you see or come across, rather than this image of everyone who's concerned with it is either a failed politician or someone out for personal gain or some sort of sad loner sat there on a computer screen, which is complete bollocks. And I've never had so much fun as the 3 or 4 years, but there has been big moments of pain and stuff.
Yeah, and I think this is the great thing about the 9/11 movement. It's all fun, basically. We're not like the mainstream left. We come here and we have a laugh and we get on with it. And say, people are buying the DVD and everything. So you got any plans to bring your party to London?
I think we're going to do some sort of showcase and link it into my poetry night, the Truth Poet Society, because people need that wherever they go. Whatever town needs to have their 12 best poets up there all saying whatever pisses them off or their gripes or the way they see the world. And maybe with like 12, maybe 24, maybe 36, let's use the numerology back, whatever, we find some sort of voice that is some sense of democracy rather than this thing we've been told we've got is democracy, which we've never bloody tried, you know.
No, not at all. The rich people have always been in charge. It's been the same people over the centuries, basically.
I mean, if we've got a real democracy, my first record, which was called F-U-C-K, the Queen, I had to press that in France, and then it came out, big furore, whatever, none of the press would cover it, whatever, thought all backfired and you couldn't even get it played. So a few years later, because I was sick of the state of hip-hop and all the negativity and women hating and gangster guns talk, I decided to release a record called Westwood is a Twat, which is for Tim Westwood, who plays all this American and takes it away from the poets, the real poets of the people in America and over here. So we're voiceless at the moment, except for people that are part of the truth movement, whether that's the health truth movement, whether it's 9/11/77, whether it's, you know, doctors or teachers who are frustrated that they can't teach what they know to be true, you know, so...
Yeah, it's this dangerous takeover, basically. You know, it's on all levels. It's with education, it's with the food they're trying to give us, it's the way they're trying to make us carry identity cards and everything else. But I really do think this is a great opportunity. I mean, I think it's so easy to expose 9/11, and you see how much interest we get here at the festival, people stopping by and asking questions and stuff. Yeah. And I think this really is a kind of genuine people's movement in which we change the collective consciousness, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big test as well. In the last year, you can actually see now people are ready to hear other versions because they're so sick of the lies and they're making the jump for themselves. So all we actually need to do is be honest with each other and sort of say sometimes that we don't know it all, but we're all working towards the same goals.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And that's what, you know, if we had any resemblance of a true political system, that's what we'd be doing. But instead we get this endless puppet show that started. It's starting to look like some, you know, Disney morality lesson.
Yeah.
And surely we've grown up a bit. Please let us evolve, please.
Yeah, I think people who grew up in our era are pretty wise to these things. I think perhaps past generations were more easily fooled, but we're all media literate now. We can see through all their bullshit, basically. And what's more, we can make the documentaries and we can do them better than them in some ways because we do it out of passion and love, whereas they're just doing it to get paid, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And the amount of people that are actually falling out of those organisations or try to work for themselves now, they're leaving in droves so much that people that haven't got a clue will get paid because they haven't got a clue. You know, so everyone looks good. Hooray!
Well, thanks very much, Dave.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
That was Dave Roughmouth there at the Big Green Gathering. And I think giving a very good impression of what the 9/11 movement's all about. It's not sitting around in drafty church halls discussing the revolution. It's about going out there and partying to try and raise some funds and raise awareness through the rave scene and so on. We're perfectly aware that young people have disengaged from the political process, and if we can present something different to them, perhaps they can pursue that, and we think that truth's the new thing. Just before we go, it remains for me to say thank you to Annie for being on the show, and thank you to my producer, Marion.
Anytime.
And just remains for me to say that, yes, in fact, I've actually shaved my head, would you believe, but this is not a protest, and it's not that I'm joining the BNP, it's just that I had an accident with a pair of electric clippers. I actually took the grade 5 thing off to trim my sideburns, and then noticed I missed a bit, and then put a tram line through my hair, and I had the choice of either shaving all my hair off or looking like I'd had a frontal lobotomy, so I shaved all my hair off.
Who can tell the difference?
Some people would say it might be a political protest and saying that I'm shaving my head while we still have a choice, because we're all heading towards Belsen in a handcart, basically. Anyway, on that note, next week it's going to be hemp. We're going to have an interview with Free Rob Cannabis. That's the man's name. He's changed his name by Deepol. And a guy called Kenyon Gibson, who's just produced a book called Hemp for Victory. But in the meantime, let's try and change the world.
Cheers, Dave.